And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
So Conor McKenna has retired, lads. It's not that surprising, the news. Maybe in the middle of the season is a little bit surprising. So he's left Essendon. He's been talking. He said, I sort of realised it's going to be over at the end of the year. I might as well finish it now. Not an easy decision, but with everything going on the last year, I said it's the right time for me to go. It's something I've always looked forward to be able to say it now that I'm retiring. It's a very happy day for me. So I'm not surprised about this. Like I said, it's kind of in the middle of the season when he'd gone back out after coming home. Like, the poor fella, like, it's so obvious how tortured he has been, Conan, that he's gone home, he's gone back out. I'd say there's been a huge weight lifted off his shoulders now. He's only 24. He's back playing with Tyrone, which is the love of his life.
I think so. And he's obviously, he's been conflicted for a while. Like, was it last year, remember, he came back and played in the playoffs? Did they keep English up? They relegated Eden Dork and he got the goal. And I think he got a bit of stick, obviously, out in Australia for that as well. But that shows that he's probably just, since then, if not before, he's been thinking about, I want to be back in Tyrone. I want to be home. And to be honest, I dug out one of his old lines when he was, being thought about going out to Australia. It was back in 2014. Remember, he was lightning up. Apparently, he was man of the match in one of those trial games, which included AFL players as well. But he did say, it's something I want to do, but worst comes to worst. You go out for a few years and then you come back home. And, like, that's what he's doing. Like, worst comes to worst in this stage is just coming back home, and he's back in Tyrone. And as you say, back with the love of his life playing football.
Yeah. He said, I'm looking forward to going home and starting a new chapter in my life, to my family and back to Gaelic football, which I've always dreamt of doing. Look, I'm very happy for him that he's finally done it. He said it's been a hard 6 years, and we know the homesickness has been pretty bad. And obviously the most recent controversy, Conor, where, he was absolutely lynched about having the coronavirus when he didn't actually have it. He blew snot out of his nose, look, to be honest, which he probably shouldn't have done, but it didn't warrant the reaction that it got. And he said, the reality is, I had a deadly disease. He obviously thought he did at the time. He's talking about the positive test, but the media were more worried about the AFL being put off than my actual life, So maybe that was just the final nail in the coffin with him.
Yeah, I'd say so. Added to, as you said, like, his desire always to go back to Tyrone, and I said, like, the homesickness that he's had the last few years, like, that it was a very ugly kind of episode earlier on this year, and I'd say that seemed to be the final nail from to decide to go home. Like, a lot of high profile media, commentators in Australia had to go. A couple of players had to go with him as well, and there was apologies afterwards and stuff, but I think a lot of the damage was done at that stage. Like, and like, I spent a few months in Melbourne years ago. Willie, like, they're obsessed with the AFL, and their media can be quite blunt as well. So, like, the way in which they dealt with it, while there was apologies subsequently afterwards, it left a sour taste in the mouth. And I'm sure that, that's something that Conor, it's obviously something that Conor McKenna hasn't forgotten. So it's just sad, really, that his time in the AFL has to come. That's going to be a kind of black mark. But it nearly feels that he has weight off his shoulders. He seems very happy, which is the main thing. And listen, Tyrone fans are going to be very happy, because by the sounds of things, it looks like he wants to get involved straight away.
Well, Essendon released a video of his highlights, and Jesus, he's explosive. Like, there's no doubt about that. Like, this lad is the real deal as a Gaelic footballer. Like, I don't think Conor McKenna is going to come home and have to, spend too much time worrying about his form. I think this fella just is something special. And the great thing about this is, where does Tyrone play him? Do you play him wing back? Maybe like a Jack McCaffrey type explosive wing back. I think Tyrone have enough of that. Do you play him as a wing forward, kind of doing the dog work? Do you play him as a centre forward? That's the question Mickey Hart's going to have to answer. But, like, I mean, the great thing about having him out there is they can stop messing around with Matty Donnelly out around that middle third, because Conor McKenna now is that more explosive middle third player, and Matty Donnelly can full-time stay in the full forward line. So it definitely gives Tyrone more options, Conor.
Oh, but like let me paint the picture for you. You have four players. You could have Cahill McShane, Matty Donnelly, Conor McKenna, plus one other who are all just completely free of that system. Let the rest of them do the dog work, and then these boys can go wherever the hell they want, wherever they're going to cause damage. And like if I was Mickey Hart, now I know it's tempting now that he can alternate Matty Donnelly, maybe bringing him in and out, bringing Conor McKenna in and out. But as you say, they've got enough athletes, they've got enough runners, strong players who will stick to the system. They've just got like some of the most potent players now that they can be playing in the full forward line, leading their attack. And when I say full forward line, I just mean free of the system and going wherever they want. And I think it's just too good an opportunity to pass up. Imagine having those three free. Like the opposition will be shitting themselves. They'll all be preoccupied with trying to stop those players. And that's the hunt Tyrone's had since the great Tyrone team.
Yeah, we want to see how accurate he is. Like, I mean, I haven't seen that yet. He's I don't remember seeing him playing with the minors. He did score a bit then. So if he's accurate, maybe centre half forward out in front of those two boys, holding that 40 the whole time, and give Peter Hart and Sludden their kind of, you know, up and down the field roles. That wouldn't be a bad kind of diamond. McKenna, Donnelly and McShane. Jesus, like, I mean, you're not going to leave three on three with those three beasts, are you, Connor?
I just had a thought, Willie, and this is on the back of our conversation that we had the other day about, you know, midfielders that like to arrive onto the attack late and burst in and score spectacular goals.
Yeah.
And I think Connor McKenna is about 6 foot, 14, just short of 14 stone. Obviously an athlete, has been an athlete for a long time. I was just looking back on a couple of clips there. He played in his second year, you know, he had a year left in minor when we played against Mayo in the 2013 final. He scored 1-2 from centre forward. I was watching back a video there. He scored 1-7 playing from midfield for St. Pat's Armagh in Ulster Schools game. And he was knocking them over with the left and the right. So now that was a long time ago. But like if he can maintain that accuracy, just something about him bursting on from midfield, I think Tyrone might have a vacancy there as well, just to sometimes with his athleticism, if you keep him up in the attack, you're maybe denying him the chance to come from deep. But listen, the picture painted, Conan painted there is quite convincing.
I'll paint you a picture then. Donnelly and McShane left inside, Peter Hart just out in front of them around the top of the D, and McKenna at centre half forward in front of them, straight in a line in front of Peter Hart. Yeah. And told he can drop into midfield, but I don't want you going back over the halfway line. I want you being able to take that ball on the burst and get one of those goals that myself and Connor are talking about. There you go. There you're forward.
Now, Sludden,
you're back. Sludden's back, chasing back to the 21 and picking up ball, and he's going to carry the ball up for you. So that's a new formation. It's been decided here now on the GR. And listen, I'm excited just talking about it. So that's the way it is. Peter Hart just in front of the two lads, and Conor McKenna just in front of him. And McKenna can go left, right, and back into midfield. No further back, Conor. I don't want you.
Oh, that's all. That's it.
Listen. Pardon?
I'm having it to hang around and just mind the defence, and then Conor McKenna can worry about going the other way.
Right, okay. Come here, some bad news for Dr. Crokes. They're playing this weekend. Tony Brosnan's out. We're big fans of his on the show. Terrible injury, actually. He'd been flying it. He punctured his lung. It was in a training session, so he's going to miss this match, and he'll miss a little bit more. He won't be in the mix for Kerry. He's lighting it up as usual. 2-10 against Austin Stacks and 8 against Temple Noh in the quarterfinal. So, like, I mean, they play mid Kerry this weekend. A massive, massive loss. Tony Brosnan, another massive loss. I think this is a loss for anyone going to watch these two games, as David Clifford lost his appeal for his red card. Now, I don't like this. Now, I don't think this is probably David Clifford pushing this. This could be East Kerry management pushing this, and David, you know, desperate to play in the semi-final, going along with it. But listen, and I think Dear McConnelly deserves a lot of credit for the time he pushed the linesman, not trying to appeal that. Because in fairness, Dear McConnelly did appeal it before, and he ended up playing against Mayo at the very last second. Remember, Alan Brogan was supposed to play. He was told at the last minute he didn't. Dear McConnelly didn't play well, and he, you know, learn from that experience to know, look, your head isn't right. I think David Clifford, like, you know, if you're preoccupied all week about getting back from a suspension and appealing a suspension that you deserve, maybe your head isn't right, Conan.
No, and like, what's not the motivation, but like, what's the angle there when you're going to appeal that? Like, what are you saying? Like, I know the footage looks bad, but it's not what it looks like. Like, you know, there's nothing to to appeal, really. And the only thing I can think of is, and again, you said it's probably not him who's pushing it, but the only thing I can think of is they're leaning in on the David Clifford name. Like, you know, you joked the last time saying Kerry won't give him a 2-game ban, which they obviously didn't. But, you know, I wonder where they're trying to think, like, the amount of stuff this guy's done for Kerry already and the amount of stuff he will do in the future, they shouldn't be suspending him. Like, you know, he's not bigger than Kerry football. And when you do something like that, yeah, like as you say, Dermot Connolly, just hold your hands up and say, that was stupid. I'll take me punishment, because it's not nice. And I don't get the point of it. Sometimes I think that they should almost be a repercussion if you're appealing a ban, especially someone as blatant as that you should have an extra game or an extra week.
There shows, yeah. Yeah, especially when you're guilty, you're wasting people's time. There should be an automatic double the suspension if your appeal is unsuccessful, Connor. That would put a stop to a lot of that messing that we're seeing, especially for the guilty cases. The most famous one is John Milan back against Cork. What year was it? Was it 03 or 04? And he put the butt of the hurley back into Brian Murphy's face. And he accepted his punishment and missed an All-Ireland semi-final against Kilkenny. Maybe it was 06. I've guessed plenty of years then. I probably have that wrong. But he accepted it. And he could have gone down what was fashionable at the time of going down to this DRA hearing and getting off on the technicality.
Was that the time that John Milan said was interviewed after the game and he said he I love me county because he'd been sent off in the Waterford one? Yeah, I think that was all four direction. But what Conan is talking about there, I think the FA have it already, or definitely some other sporting bodies, is it's called a frivolous appeal. So if you know you're guilty and you appeal against it, and then it's ruled that the appeal was frivolous, let's say the ban is double, but that threat doesn't exist. It's a pity it doesn't, because like I'd say David Clifford or East Kerry were compelled to appeal against it because they knew there was a chance it would happen. Like, I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, there's been, I know of like 3 or 4 sending offs that have happened in the Mayo Championship this year, and they've all got off and they seem to be on these technicalities. And there's any amount of like examples from intercounty from over the last few years where people are getting off on technicalities as well. So the reason why people are appealing this is because they've seen in the past that other players are getting off. So why not chance their arm? So the only way to stop this is by introducing some sort of punishment that stops. Like, you'd have sympathy for David Clifford if he had a case to make, but he didn't. I mean, like the case, we said it a couple of weeks ago, he was being held as he often is, but he kicked out a leg and it was clear as day to anyone who could see it on video. So he just, in that case, he should have accepted his appeal, whether it was him that decided to or not. But the longer these things go on without there being punishment for these frivolous appeals, the more you're going to have people appealing them left, right and centre, because some people will get off.
We have some quotes from Jim Gavin, lads. It's not often that we have him. He's out of the game here now. He was on the Sports Chronicle. I think he was promoting something. So it's not like they got an interview with him. He was doing something. I don't know what he was promoting. But anyway, he's on the Sports Chronicle and he was talking about how Dublin played. And he said, some might have looked at my teams and thought they were like robots in how to perform. But that's far from it. My role was to... And that's grand. Like, the self-awareness is pretty strong there, you know. Like, I mean, he was well aware of how the team was perceived, I would say, more in the last 2 years, you know, and they had to do that to beat these defensive systems. They wouldn't even be critical of that. But he continued on. He says, he gets into a bit of Jim Gavin type of jargon here. He says, but that's far from it. My role was to facilitate the creation of an environment and culture combined with their values and their efforts that would allow them to perform at their own highest standard, to allow them to express themselves on the field of play. Can you get a more Jim Gavin sentence in all your life, Conan? Will I read that again?
Sorry, I switched off there.
This is Jim Gavin, just true and true, this type of talk. My role was to facilitate the creation of an environment and culture combined with their values and their efforts that would allow them to perform at their own highest standard, to allow them to express themselves on the field of play. Can you actually say words without really saying any, without really meaning anything, or getting, you know, kind of specific about anything? He's an expert at it.
It's hard to argue with those.
It's very hard to argue with that environment stuff and the culture and the values and the efforts and all that kind of stuff.
I remember, though, I think Derry beat them in 2014 in the league up in Celtic Park, an amazing time when Derry were half decent. And, you know, Gavin was pretty annoyed afterwards, but this was around the time, obviously, before the Donegal defeat, and, you know, like, they were swashbuckling side at the time, and they couldn't not, but he was almost preachy, like, every team they were playing, especially when they lost or didn't win, he was almost always having a go at defensive teams. And, you know, it was like he was on this crusade to bring attacking football back. And that's the way they were playing. And ever since that defeat, yeah, like his personality seemed to change a little bit, certainly with the media anyway. And like, obviously the team's personality changed a little bit. It was definitely worth it. They won 5 in a row and he still played the best football overall. But it's just interesting, like just to sort of, I'd love to go back to 2013-14 and just compare those quotes with some of the stuff that he had been saying.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, I think it's very harsh. And for him to even suggest that they played like robots, or so some people thought it and even had to explain himself, I don't think he needs to explain himself, yeah. Connor. They turned very, very functional because that's what they had to do to beat, you know, the Tyrones or the Monaghans, who were going back ahead of the ball and standing there waiting for them. Like, I mean, they did learn their lesson in 14. That's not robotic. That's just adapting to what the challenge was.
Yeah, like it was clear there was structure there. There had to be structure after 14 because they were so caught in the hop by Donegal in that game. Because, as Conan said, the swashbuckling style, it was always a swashbuckling style. It was being played on their terms, no matter who they came up against. And Donegal caught them on the hop completely. So it was clear that they had to change tack. In those circumstances, though, I would never have said that. Even the last few years, I would never have said that. I didn't hear many people say that Dublin played like robots. They had to be more functional, as you say, in games against those defensive teams. But the next day, if they played against a team that wanted to, you know, go toe-to-toe with them, they could go toe-to-toe with them as well. And I think the best thing, like Jim Gavin, he went a long way around, you know, he went a typical Jim Gavin-esque way of saying it. But I think the best thing he did was kind of empowered the players to adapt in those circumstances. You know, they were good at, they didn't have to be told by Jim Gavin. There was a couple of examples. You're talking Mayo in 2017, the final, I think, and even Mayo last year when Jim Gavin admitted that, like, he didn't say anything in the dressing room at halftime. The players sorted it out themselves. And same against Kerry in the drawn game. It was the players that made the decisions on the pitch as opposed to Jim Gavin having to tell them. So while, you know, I would never have heard them described as robots, and I think if they were described like that, it's very harsh. But you mentioned there, Woody, about the Jim Gavinisms. I just saw a line that stood out to me. He spoke about the continuum of growth builds resilience later on in that line, and I thought that was as much Jim Gavin as you can get.
No, it definitely was. Like, anyone that would call the All Ireland finals against Kerry robotic football hasn't a bloody clue what they're talking about, because that was some of the best football. That was probably the highest level of football that maybe ever was played, considering the balance both teams were able to get between defending and attacking. You know, like, I mean, it's not as easy as it was back in the 90s, where you have no defensive players, you have no one dropping back, you know, or even during the noughties so much. Football has evolved so much that the balls that were given into the forwards, the play, the support play, all those things were at as high a level as I've ever seen in those All-Ireland finals. Anyways, then he actually turns into an army man then. He's talking about not getting carried away on the sideline. He says, I'm watching every passage of play. I'm scanning the battlefield of a game. I observe. I'm making a decision. I action it. I test it. And I repeat that cycle. Like, I mean, he goes full army on trying to explain why he doesn't get carried away on the sideline. I'd make the argument that he's not actually that great on the sideline. I think Jim's a brilliant organiser. I don't think he's that special at making changes within games, and there's plenty of evidence for that. What I think he's excellent at is, after a drawn game, standing back, listening to people, making the right decisions then when he's analysed the game. But, like, not, I know lots of managers who have great football brains, but on the sideline, like, kind of potentially free. I know Mikko Dwyer was desperate for freezing during a big game. Like, if the game was close, he wouldn't change anything. He'd freeze. It was only if you were losing badly or winning well, he'd, you know, feel the need to kind of change things. But, like, I mean, you can't be brilliant at everything, I suppose. But, like, I do think that Jim, if he had a weakness, it would be, I'd love to ask him that question, actually, what his main weakness was as a manager. Imagine if he said making changes during a game, Woolly, that's my biggest weakness. But yeah, it's interesting to get some quotes from him. Oh, he went on then to say, my role wasn't to be a fan. My role was to be their manager, to try and make the best decisions to enable those players to be the best they can be and to point and propel them towards that higher purpose that was more enduring than themselves. He has to turn into that old nonsense talk towards the end then a little bit. But I suppose he's talking about, he's been questioned there, Conan, about, you know, being joyless. And to be honest, I do think that's affected. I do think that was a big mistake, the way he didn't, you know, look happy after winning that All-Ireland against Mayo, because at the same time, and I do respect the fact he doesn't want the cameras to come and get his celebration and be all about him. But in actual fact, the opposite works, that the attention of him not even smiling took away from that win. You know, it had the opposite effect of what he was intending.
And I actually think that he's probably the one person who people might have called robotic, you know, not his team so much. And again, like, I have the highest respect for him, but like when you talk about robots and, like even his quote there, the way he's going through everything he does, I action it, I test it, I repeat, you know, like that's robotic. Like, and he was obviously deliberately doing that as well, because that's what he saw his role as. But like, again, if you go through like some of the stuff that his team did do, like there was nothing robotic about Conn O'Callaghan's goals against Lee Keegan or Colin Boyle, or, you know, the goal against Tyrone. Like, the team still produced moments of magic. And we talked after the game actually about Jim Gavin after the first All-Ireland final, remember last year, and we were saying that he basically got out of jail, like the players pulled him out, like he got a lot of stuff wrong and he didn't address it during the game. But he was able to address it in the 2 weeks between that then, and he did that brilliantly. And one of the examples was going to Kieran Kilkenny and saying, you need to go and just win this match. And again, remove him whatever shackles Kieran Kilkenny might have felt. He was able to pinpoint that and say, go and win this game. So his preparation before matches was brilliant. Like, he always like nailed Tyrone. Every strength Tyrone had, he just shut it down. And, you know, but probably you're right, in game, he just didn't react.
Did we ever get to the bottom of that actually, Conan? Do you remember after the drawn match, after everything was switched around, when Tommy Walsh came on and Kerry took off a defender, Sean O'Shea and James McCarthy then went with, was it James McCarthy went with Tommy Walsh, and then Sean O'Shea was just left completely free? Did we ever get to the bottom of that? Because I left for Australia after that draw match. Is that what actually happened in that match?
That is, because remember James McCarthy was their best player as well in the engine room, and then they just pulled him back in the fullback to mark Tommy Walsh. It was an absolute disaster. No, like, there was nothing to get to the bottom of, other than it was just bad changes. And then obviously, you saw the excitement every time Tommy Walsh was warming up. Then the second game, Philly McMahon, that was his role. He marked Tommy Walsh. So again, they addressed it. But in the first game, they might have gotten caught by not acting fast enough and getting James McCarthy, A, off Tommy Walsh, and B, back where they needed him.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, it's actually criminal. I remember saying after that Monday, after that All-Ireland Finals, leave Sean O'Shea as the spare man, you know, instead of a defender. It was bizarre stuff. Good news for Ballyhale Shamrocks fans and Kilkenny fans is that Adrian Mullen, anyone watching Ballyhale and Clara last week would have saw Adrian pucking around. He's in a pair of shorts. He was looking in good shape. He obviously did his cruciate earlier on in the year and would have thought his season was over, but it's not over. It looks like he's back in the mix. James O'Connor, the Ballyhale manager, said he's making great headway. He was there training on the field the other night with the physio, but he hasn't done any hurling with us yet. So I don't expect him to be back with the club for the remainder of the championship. For Kilkenny, I'm sure he might make an appearance. All right, so that's fantastic news for them. They obviously play James Stevens this weekend in the semi-final. Final. Then you're looking at the county. He's not ready in 2 weeks, but the hurling starts in mid-October, so he'd have 5 or 6 weeks to get in the mix for that. So, you know, a great addition for Kilkenny. And again, this is always the case. You look at fellas, you look at Cathal McShane, Connor. He looked like his season was over too. And now you have Adrian Mullen, Cathal McShane, and lots others, I'm sure, that realise here, this isn't all that bad, this whole coronavirus.
It's worked out quite all right. Just hopefully he doesn't suffer a recurrence of an injury like Colin McShane does. It's just like TJ Reid was saying there about a month ago that he was 50-50 to feature for, saying Adrian Mullen was 50-50. He'd obviously been doing some work in TJ's gym to feature for Kilkenny this year. So obviously, given the comments there by James O'Connor, he's come on a lot since then too. And it's just like, it's great when you hear these stories about somebody who suffered there's still a thing with cruciates, although like medical science has obviously come on so much that when you hear somebody about a cruciate, you know, somebody suffering a cruciate, you think they're going to be out for ages. But this is another story, you know, to tell us that like these lads are back, you know, they've done the rehab, they've done, you know, they've got whatever they've had to do done, and they're back within a year, let's say. Now I know Adrian Mullen is young, he probably has that on his side as well.
He'll be back in 8 months.
That's exactly it. Yeah. So like, and you'd imagine that like he's done it. That's not a shortcut or anything like that. He's done everything he's had to do, and he's back in 8 months. So just for his sake, like obviously we've heard of cruciates can recur, and I'm thinking of poor Billy McCarthy. But like that's massive for Adrian Mullen. And like, while Ballyhale don't seem to need him at the moment, but that's going to be huge for Kilkenny as well.
So Jamie Malone has been talking about showers, and again, I completely agree with Jamie Malone. What he says is, I'm not saying that everyone has to crowd into the showers, just that the option is there for some lads in certain circumstances. Not everyone is going to avail of showers, and not everyone is going to be comfortable in them. It's for the welfare of the players, and it's crazy to ask to have a facility for lads who need. It's not crazy to ask to have a facility for lads who need it the most. Even for training, there could be a few lads going a couple of hundred kilometres for a training session and be up again for work in the morning. So I completely agree with this. And again, this is kind of a computer says no attitude that you get, especially within the GEA. And if I was up in Portlaoise training and the weather's not great, and the lads that are living in Portlaoise drive on home, I have a fella who works up in Dublin. He's all muck. He doesn't have family in Portlaoise. I would be saying, here, go in there and get that shower and wash the muck off your legs at least. Anyways, the showers aren't hot because we can't turn them on, but get in under the cold one and get the, you know, clean yourself up some little bit. The idea that a club official would say, Jesus, no, you know, like, I mean, the direction came from Croke Park now, and like, we can't start letting you into the shower. They'll all want to get it. Do you get me, Conan? I can imagine that conversation exactly happening for a fella getting back into his car, filthy, dirty, sweating, and landing back up into Dublin.
I can definitely sympathise, but like, yeah, the optics still just seem a bit risky. I'm not even thinking about people piling into showers. I'm just thinking like the way it's done. You're washing dirt and germs off yourself, and then the water's gallon around people's feet and stuff. Like, so just like, I definitely have sympathy for what Jamie Malone's saying, but like, the it would need to be regulated, I think, and like, you know, shown that the showers are individualized, or yeah, there's going to be certain slots, or like, and not to make it a computer says no thing, but you know, just like thinking about the pubs have been closed now for 7 months, like surely like the GAA can, you know, do something about their showers before everybody jumps into that. It just seems a bit of a stretch to go into showers after a game, considering what's going on.
Now, so, like, I mean, I'll put it to this way. You have to wear flip-flops. Fine. So that covers your feet. There's what is in any usual dressing room? There could be 8 different shower heads. You know, how many lads are commuting? So we've 3 lads commuting. Go to 3 of you in there now and stay well away from each other and get your shower. And that's it. I don't see that as a big deal. There's going to be a huge test because for the inter-county season, in the middle of winter, they're going to have to open the dressing rooms. So what are they going to do for the showers in that situation, Connor? Like, I mean, you're going to have a situation for inter-county season, which is in the middle of winter. You cannot have Derry driving back from, you know, wherever their furthest game is in the last 2 league games, or Kerry or wherever, driving back filthy. So you're going to have a situation, maybe almost like, I don't know, like, I mean, those jail movies you see on the TV where it's single file up and you turn around with your towel and your own personal bar of soap, and you're going to get your shower and hope you don't get the shit kicked out of you.
Jesus, such an image to have to picture one of you.
They're going to have to do that. You're going to have to queue up, socially distance along a corridor, and turn the corner and allow 3 or 4 into the showers at a time. And that's what they're going to have to do.
So the one thing I was thinking with club training, for example, so I didn't think, listen, it's not ideal, but I didn't think it was the end of the world, because in most cases, in the majority of cases, I'd say you have players that are training that live close by. So it's like, it's not ideal, but it's not the end of the world that you can just jump into their car, go home and have a shower. What I was thinking of, let's say with inter-county, for example, like, you know, is this a case then that like overnight stays will have to become, you know, mandatory, that like, you know, does a team hop onto the bus immediately and go to a hotel nearby, and that's where they can get all their showers if they're not open by the GAA by then? Because like, the only other thing I was thinking, if you have one match in a big stadium, let's say like, well, Croke Park, for example, or even a county ground, the chances are those county grounds probably have, you know, 3 to 4, if not more, dress rooms, could have 5 to 6. And I was thinking, like, is there a way then you can facilitate it that you can split up into groups, and that, as you say, people are maybe let in at a time or something like that, and as big as precautions as you can take, and rules regarding people having to wear flip-flops and all that sort of stuff. Because it's not an issue now, you know, because the weather hasn't been that bad, whatever. But come November, December, especially when you have county teams trained, you know, traveling long distances, like, you're going to hear a massive amount, I would say, about teams having to hop into buses or hop into their own cars and go home and travel huge distances, making them probably, you know, they're all wet and cold, and making them more vulnerable to to, you know, viruses that the virus that's doing the rounds at the moment as well. So I get where Conlon's coming from about the optics, but I would imagine that this is going to become a far bigger issue the closer we get to intercounty and the closer we get to winter in particular.
Yeah, no, it definitely will. Like, I mean, I don't think anyone should be made wear flip-flops going to a GA shower anyways. Anyone doesn't wear flip-flops would want their head red with that grimy, filthy floor and the smell of piss coming out of the toilet. And, like, I mean, I don't know, Conlon, would you go in barefoot into a shower in a clubhouse?
I fucking knew you when you asked me this question. And I have too many like teammates and stuff who listen to it, so I have to admit that yeah, I would go on barefoot. Okay, you got me. So I'm saying no to showers, no more showers for the rest of the year.
Oh my god, that's disgusting. So Malone is still up in the air about whether he's going to play with Clare. Remember the big thing with Clare was we were tipping him to go down in the league because Gary Brennan and Jimmy Malone weren't going to be there, and they're 100% two Division One level players. So Jamie's back. Listen, anyone that's back and is in some way fit, it's a knockout championship. Play the bloody thing. You've gotten away without training all year. Now it's the good stuff. You know what I mean? To not play this year is madness. You know, not when you're in good shape. Gary Brennan hasn't committed yet. Colm Collins says you mightn't believe this, but I don't know. That's whether he's committed or not. He hasn't committed as of yet, be it yes or no. Again, message to Gary Brennan is, don't be stupid. Don't miss out on a championship that's only going to last, you know, a month lead up to it, pretty much. Two league games and then a championship game. And another, you could have four intercounty games in 4 weeks, and that's your season, which only starts, you know what I mean, in the 14th. Well, we've four more days until they can start training. So I think you'd want your head examined not to play this year. This is a fairy tale year for anyone who is given out about the commitment needed for intercounty. Have you seen the Longford statement on Kilku, lads? Kilo. Jesus Christ, I'm after getting that wrong three different times. And I'm talking about it for the last 2 weeks. So Kilo, we'd all know the story of that, lads. We're not going to get back into it. Myself and Connor talked about it again on Monday. But the Longford statement is hilarious. So this is Longford after banning this club for the maximum possible that they could have banned them, to 48 weeks. And then it went to the Leinster Council. And the Leinster Council upheld that ban, which is completely out of order. But I'm not surprised at that. This is GA administrators backing up GA administrators. So, like, I mean, I've no problem. Well, I do have a huge problem with the Leinster Council backing that up. But maybe they said they were hamstrung with the rules. Who knows? But they went to the DRA, and the DRA found problems with it. So they're after getting off. So wouldn't you think Longford GA would be a little bit annoyed, you know, that something that they fought so strongly for, they went to mediation with Pádraig Duffy, they couldn't find a solution. So here's the response now to going to the DRA outsiders and them actually quashing the ban. So they say Longford GA are delighted. Oh no, Longford GA accept the written decision of the tribunal in the matter of the arbitration sought by Kilo Emmett Óg, which was delivered last night. Longford GA are delighted to see that Kilo Emmett can resume in our championship, and we look forward to the completion of same in a timely manner. What kind of game are they playing here, Conlon? Like, I mean, that's not the response of a board that has tried to impose an incredibly draconian suspension on a club.
As if they had nothing to do with it as well. Like, yeah. You know, we're delighted that they can play. Like, you were the reason that they couldn't play.
I know, yeah.
You could have made yourself happy all along.
Yeah, it's incredible. So Ronan McGoldrick is a Kilo player, and he's been tweeting about this, and what he's tweeting is perfectly logical. He says, the board has of yet refused to deal with our initial case, buried the findings of an independent investigation committee report from Croke Park, and banned us against rule for 48 weeks and are now delighted we can resume playing. Laughable. They literally weaponized the rule book to silence our club rather than let the truth come to light and deal with the ramifications. So my reading of this is the ramifications were Kilo Emmett refusing to play an underage game because a player who was sent off had the red card turned into two yellows. So the Longford County Board, instead of dealing with the fact that this card had been changed and this fella now is able to play, that they ended up banning a whole club from under 16s up, Connor, to actually hide the fact that they might have done a little not as good as a wink to get this young fella back okay to play the game.
It was delighted in inverted commas in that statement.
It was.
Because it nearly seems like sarcasm from Longford GA, given, you know, it's such cheek, to be honest about it, such cheek to put that out in the statement, considering all that's going on. Do they not know that, like last Thursday, was it? It was up before the GRA last Friday, last Thursday, had to go to DRA. And this was after Pádraig Duffy had been brought in, one of the most well-known administrators in GAA in recent years, was brought in to mediate it and couldn't even come to a resolution. And then you're releasing a statement saying that you're delighted that the club have been brought back into the championship, having gone so far against them in this case. Like, you know, it's just, you know, it'd be slapping the face to anyone involved with Killoe to be reading that. But I suppose at the end of the day, they're just probably thinking, listen, they're back in the championship. But why didn't they just say Killoe are back in the championship, end of, and not say they're delighted? It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, ridiculous. Now, delighted was inverted commas on Ronan McGoldrick's tweet, not in the Longford statement.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they put it in delighted, because it read sarcastically, nearly given how involved Longford had been to kind of push the direction the other way. But anyway, listen, Killoe are back in the championship, so that's the most important thing.
So Ulster Council Chief Executive Brian McAvoy has been talking, and we know that 400 are allowed at club games. Basically, I'm just going to say this before I read the quotes. The Ulster Championship is where it's going to be at this year. And if I'm going to any games, well, I can only go to Ulster Championship games, actually, I suppose. But, like, I mean, this is just going to be, it's going to be gas that the Ulster Championship, so they're capping their numbers, and they've voluntarily capped their numbers at 400 for the club games, as we know. But Brian McAvoy says, we might increase that for semi-finals and finals, but at the minute it's 400. But if you look at other sports, the Irish Cup final at Windsor Park between Glentoran and Ballymena United had 500 added. We would have county grounds that are bigger than Windsor Park, so there would be no issue with the regulations if we increase those numbers as time passes. It is hopefully the way we will go, because if you look at other jurisdictions, the crowds are starting to come back as well. There are pilot programs at soccer games in England ongoing, up to 2,500 at games over there. Ulster Council let 1,000 in, or 2,000 into Clonus for an Ulster final, Conan, and just laugh at the Leinster Munster and Connacht Championships.
and they probably could have had more in Windsor Park as well, just nobody was bothered going to watch Glentoran and Ballymena.
That was the all ticket sold.
Yeah. But like seriously, there has to be some sort of thought in the GAA's head now. Like, you know, if this keeps going, do they take games up to Ulster? Like,
yeah, brilliant idea.
Like, you know, all are in the semi-final, all are in final, quarter-finals even. Like, you know, there are no quarter-finals, but like, why not?
Yeah, but then I suppose you're going to have the trouble of the lads getting all dirty and having no showers up there and having to drive back home. So they're going to have to fix the shower issue first, Conor. But I agree with you. This isn't without precedent, Conor. Like, I mean, the reality is the Ulster final has been played in Croke Park plenty of times. Well, not all the games, but at least all provincial finals should be in Clonus. Isn't that your solution?
Yeah, I think so. I think why not? Unless now there's word that, you know, this updated roadmap is coming out next week. So whether that's going to accommodate supporters at games, I don't know.
I can't wait to see. We couldn't follow a roadmap for 8 weeks, and now they're going to give us a 9-month roadmap. Yeah. It's the greatest farce I've ever heard.
Hey, hang on, actually, because Clonus is in Monaghan, so that probably can't.
Sorry. That's a terrible. Conan, I'm glad you corrected that now, or I'd be absolutely attacked. So where are we playing? Where are we playing this match then?
Probably going to Armagh.
In Armagh, maybe. Armagh wouldn't be. Oh yeah, Armagh's a lovely little ground. 1,000 in Armagh would be perfect. Or 2,000.
Imagine that all in the final, Leinster final, Munster hurling final up in Armagh.
Listen, it'd be great for the promotion of hurling in Ulster. This is all perfect.
Yeah. If we go to Boston to play Super 11s, they can play the Leinster hurling championship in Armagh.
Lads, here's the solution, seriously, because that Armagh ground is a lovely little tight, compact ground, and 2,000 in that stand would make a lot of noise. All of the matches in the athletic grounds in Armagh, Conor, that's the solution. I don't see any problems with that. It's a new stadium. They'll have lovely high-tech showers. I'm too old to have played in them or to have showered in them. But I think that's the way around this. Because like I said, I know like this 9-month roadmap. Did you ever hear the likes? They're changing their mind every couple of weeks, and now they're going to give us a 9-month roadmap. What a waste of their time. But like, I mean, I still think even at best case scenario, we're looking at 200 or 300 into an intercounty game.
Yeah, it looks like it, I'd say. Yeah. Well, it definitely won't be. If what it's been in Ulster has been 400, it's not going to be any more than 400, you'd imagine, as well. Funny thing is, like, the prospect of a Munster hurling final in Armagh is more likely to get the government to act on crowd the GAA games than anything that's happened to date. So, but listen, I'm sold on your idea, Willie. Bring it all up to Armagh and not clone us.
Yeah, no, definitely not Clonus. And thank God, Conan, you just remembered that. I know I would be attacked on that. That's something that I wouldn't be able to live down. A shout out to Ronan Hughes before we finish up. A bit like the 9 o'clock news on RT now, where you kind of finish up on a nice lighthearted, you know, human interest story. And so Ronan Hughes, this one is, he's 17. His birthday was yesterday. And I gave him a shout out yesterday. So he's only 17 and he sponsors his own teams. He's a minor. He sponsors his own club team's jerseys. He plays with the Neil GA club. Connor, I'll throw this one to you. Very, very impressive young fella. He sells sports gear and has done well enough at it online to be able to sponsor his own team as a minor. So that is pretty impressive stuff.
I think he's only, like, he's had the business, well, like, it shouldn't be surprising he's only had it a short period of time, given he's only 17. But I think it's only in the last year or so, and obviously he's picked up to the level that he can afford to sponsor his own minor team, which is brilliant. Like, how great would that be when you're playing in a team with your company's name on the jerseys of the team and you're only 17? But he comes from a very proud and resourceful family, Woolly. His uncle, Owen, I actually played with him years ago. He's the manager of the Neil senior team. And he managed them to their first intermediate title last year and to the senior quarterfinals. His dad is chairman of the club. His uncle is the mayor of the parish. And actually, there was a great line by Liam Horan. He'd be a well-known journalist from Mayo as well. He said that he calls them the Neely Rays because the Hughes is influential around the Neil. But geez, fair play to him. It was a great, great story to see. And ties in perfectly with your last story of the news, like an finally section that we're going to after what we've had to talk about today.
Yeah, exactly. We can move from coronavirus incapacities to Ronan Hughes. It's a lovely way to finish it. I saw Paddy Stapleton tweeting that, listen, that's a great way to guarantee that you start. Now, that's a very cynical tweet by our own Paddy Stapleton, because apparently Ronan Hughes is an outstanding prospect, and that is the furthest thing from Ronan Hughes's mind. So we'll leave it there. We'll be back and we'll look ahead to the matches at the weekend.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, yeah. and it does happen, yeah. But I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving, and I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show didn't look great, there was, maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out dirty, but unlucky to lose. Like, let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100%
reason to remember the name. Fort Minor. All right, lads, so the game's on television. We're back to having a Friday night game, lads. It's East Kerry versus St Brendan's. Have we any interest in watching this now that David Clifford isn't going to be watching it? The throw-in is at 7:30. Look, I might watch it, but it's ruined for me. I'd be interested in seeing his brother all right, but other than that.
Well, let me paint you a picture, Willie. they met 3 years ago, actually, and the score finished up 3-24 to 4-18.
Wow.
Yeah, so, like, absolute
crap. Yeah, but what did Clifford score, though? That's the thing. Take what he scored.
He only came on. This is when he was still a minor, so he came on in the second half of extra time, and he scored the goal, the winning goal. But, so they did all right without him for all that time, and there was a hurling game on beforehand, which finished 13-12, so the football purists were delighted about that.
Right, okay. So we know Tony Brosnan's out for Crokes, but that Crokes versus Mid-Kerry game isn't on Friday night. I think that's on Saturday or Sunday, but both those semi-finals are on this weekend. On Saturday, on RTE, they're doing a double header of Kilkenny hurling, Dixborough versus the Loughlin Gaels. That is at 3 o'clock, which is very early, isn't it, for that match? I wonder why that is. And then they have Ballyhale Shamrocks versus James Stevens at 5 o'clock. That's the one most people will want to be watching. It's the repeat of last year's final, Ballyhale versus James Stevens, and our own Cheddar Plunkett is over James Stevens. So be interested to see what trick Cheddar has up his sleeve. He has regrets from last year's final. So let's see how he can fix them. Interestingly, the first game is a repeat of this year's league final. Dixborough won it 3-0 on penalties. So they're two very evenly matched teams. Dixborough won the county final in 17 and Loughlin Gales won it as recently as 16. So for me, they look like the four strongest teams in Kilkenny getting through to the semi-finals. So they're a big doubleheader that RT have. On Sunday, we have Dunloy versus Lochgale Shamrocks. This is a county final. I want to spend more time talking about county finals, lads, because we're at that point now rather than talk about semi-finals. And Dunloy versus Lochgale Shamrocks, this is on TG Cahir. The throw-in here is at 2:45. Dunloy won it last year. They're defending champions. Dunloy ended up losing to Slocknail, didn't they, Conan, in the Ulster club?
Yeah.
They'd be confident club, let's just put it that way. Lochgale Shamrocks obviously are the big team in Antrim. They won the All-Ireland Club in 2012, and last county final they won was 16, so it's a bit of a wait for them. And Liam Watson has been talking, and I want to talk to Liam Watson after reading these quotes. So he says, Dunloy are there for the taking. All the talks about Dunloy, they talk themselves up, fair play to them, they're last year's champions. So like, I mean, he's calling it. Liam Watson's 38, he's come out of retirement to come back and play with Lochgale Shamrocks this year. He only came on in the semi-final, or he came on in the game before that and played the entire semi-final. That was it.
Yeah, and scored 1-3 in that semi-final as well. So 38, yeah. And still going well. What's that? 8 years after he scored that famous hat-trick in the All-Ireland final. This is going to be a cracker because they're close enough proximity. Like Antrim Hurlands obviously fuels a lot of rivalry. And as you say, Dunloy are the champions, but they haven't been going that well. Like they only won one group game out of three. They drew two of them, like, but they finished top of the group. But they had to win their last game just to get through, whereas Lochgale have just been hammering everybody in front of them. They had a tough, tight game in the semi-final, but they scored 2:31. So I think they're in better form coming into it. And like Eddie McCluskey seems to be going forever as well as Liam Watson. He's playing wing forward for them, and he banged over five the last day as well. So I actually fancy Lochgale here. Just put my neck on the line, even though they're playing the champs.
Right, okay. You mentioned he scored 1-3, so he was talking about it. He said, it was strange for myself there. I missed a lot of scores. I could have been coming away with maybe 1-8 or 1-9. But look, I don't care what I score as long as the team gets over the line. Fair play to the boys. They dug deep. That's a good group of boys there. That is St. John's, who'd have beaten the semi-final. But at the same time, we're Lochgale Shamrocks, and we're not going anywhere.
Brilliant.
Good man, Liam Watson. Like, I mean, this is what we're talking about. We're the Lochgale Shamrocks. They might be a good crowd of young lads, but we're the Lochgale Shamrocks, Connor.
Imagine hearing that from
being from Kilshima, you cannot relate to that. From being from Portlaoise, I can relate to that kind of cockiness and history.
No, I can't. You're right, Willie. I'll give you that in fairness. Imagine if you're a young fella in that dressing room and you hear somebody's experience as Liam Watson saying that. And he had a great line. He goes, he just said, I can't wait to get back out there again, hopefully lift that trophy and go and have a good time with these boys after that. That sounded great to me. What more do you want than that?
Yeah, he does motocross or something. Like I said, he's an interesting enough fella. He was saying there was a good interview with him in the Irish News, and he was talking about staying in good shape. He did a lot of road running to stay fit for the motocross or something like that. So he's definitely interesting enough. We know about his scoring heroics in that All-Ireland final. All right. Ballymote, the other game on TG Cahir is another live game, which is fantastic. Again, it's brilliant to have this and not have these deferred games. Deferred games should be done away with, as far as I'm concerned. I'm tired of that. Ballymote Kickhams versus Kilmacud Crokes. Huge game in the Dublin Championship semi-final. This is a 4:30 throw-in. They played each other in the Championship last year. I remember this game. Kilmacud won 2-13 to 14 points. And I remember Ballymote Kickhams making some stupid decisions on the sideline. Number one, James McCarthy being put back from midfield back into cornerback to mark Paul Mannion. Madness. You let Kilmacud Crokes have to think of something to mark James McCarthy. Don't lose James McCarthy marking Paul Mannion. It's stupid. It's madness. Often think of Ballymun Kickhams. They spend too much time worrying about the opposition instead of letting the opposition worry about them. They dropped Evan Comerford. Now, in fairness, they dropped him because I think Evan hadn't showed up to something, or he'd been away on a stag or something. They had to drop him. So Sean Curry played and his kickouts were all over the place, and John Small was injured. So, like, I mean, if you look at the last game, Conan, it was James McCarthy and it was John Small who really drove the team on in the second half against Nafina. they can't make those same mistakes the next day. And that's just, you know, that's just it. If it comes down to Paul Mannion's causing some problems, move Philly over on him, you know, move John Small back on him. And maybe you could move John Small back on him and move Philly out centre back, you know, do something like that. But don't mess up your whole team because of Paul Mannion.
No, that's it. They've got enough options and they've got enough potent options going forward as well that they don't want to take away from. And I can't picture who it was, or I can't remember the name, but they had another cornerback who was marking Stephen Smith for Skerries, and I know they don't care about Skerries, but he's our main man. So they didn't even have Philly McMahon, we just kept him on him, didn't move John Small back. He did the job, brilliant tight cornerback. So they've got these class defenders in spades. And as you say, like, look what James McCarthy's doing for them in midfield. Look what Paddy Small's doing up top. Dean Rock, like, Davy Byrne's playing centre forward for them and absolutely loving it there. So, like, they need to just impose themselves. They need to be more like Liam Watson and be like, we're Ballymun, look at our player. Yeah. Let's go and take the game to them.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And it's always the cliche that sometimes you would criticise the way some managers say, look, we're not going to worry too much about the opposition. We're going to worry about our own game. And that was often about Mick O'Dwyer would have said. And that's great. Now, there is a balance. There's sometimes a nice little tactical switch is a great job to negate something they're good at. But definitely don't move your best player, your leader, your driving force from his best position and put him in cornerback, Connor. Like, you know, there's extreme versions of this, and the best kind of version is somewhere in between, like finding a balance.
Yeah, like in some cases it can be naive to think, you know, that like we're just going to go out and play our own game, especially depending on the number of threats I suppose the opposition have. You could say that, and then, you know, somebody like Paul Mannion could go out and kick, you know, could kick 110 and win the game for you or whatever. But there's one thing, you know, planning for Paul Mannion. And then there's one thing, putting somebody like James McCarthy, who is the driving force for Ballymun, as he is for Dublin, and probably even stands up a bit more for Ballymun in that midfield position. Like, any time I've seen James McCarthy for Ballymun, he manages to be, you know, just back centre-back sometimes, then driving forward and getting points and scores and always making his impact around the middle as well. So I think that would be, it was crazy to do last year, and if they're thinking of doing it again, it'd be crazier again, especially when you have, like, it's not as if Ballymun are short of options that could deal with Paul. Like, anyone would struggle to deal with Paul Mannion. But you have Philly McMahon back there, you have John Small back there if absolutely necessary. So to take away so much from your own band would be stupid. And you'd like to think that Ballymun have learned from that and aren't going to do it again this weekend.
Yeah, so really looking forward to that. Keane O'Sullivan wasn't playing last year either. He was out, but his form hasn't been outstanding. Kieran Kilkenny gave him an awful roast and against Castleknock. So it'll be interesting to see how he fares out at centre half back and who Ballymun even put on him. Because if Keane's confidence isn't great and he's dropping off and he's covering his full back line, maybe Paddy Small might not be a bad fella to put out there and have Keane in two minds, you know, on how to play that role. Often, if you have a fella who's just going to drop into midfield too far, you make Keane's job an awful lot easier, even though Kieran Kilkenny did that, but had the fitness to get back up and support the play, and Keane had lost him at that stage. So it'd be interesting to see how Ballymun manage Keane O'Sullivan at centre-back. So I'm really looking forward to that one. Really looking forward to the hurling on Saturday as well, especially the second game. Have a look at Cheddar on the line against the best team in the country. The Armagh County Finals this weekend as well, lads. Huge game in Armagh. It's Cross McGlen versus Meharry. Cross McGlen going for three in a row after going asleep for 2 years there, back when Meharry actually won one and Armagh Harps won one in 16 and 17. Then Cross McGlen came back. So they're like kind of the biggest rivals there are at the moment in Armagh. They are familiar enough with each other. Cross McGlen beat them last year, I think it was by 5 points, but they got the goals in the semi-final last year. So Tony Kernan was sent off in the semi-final. He's back. They were just two yellows. So, I'm not sure this is going to be the type of classic county finals we've seen the last couple of years with Ballymacnab, because I think Meharry, Finian Moriarty is their manager and they're a little bit more defensive. So we won't have Joe Brawley writing an article about this one. It'll be more of an arm wrestle, Conan.
He might write it if they end up like hammering Meharry and it's another victory for Cross McGlen and all they're trying to do for the game. But
For courage and bravery and kick passes.
And Fenton said to me afterwards in the clubhouse now, he said, watch this wee team, Ricky. You won't know who Fenton is. We'll never find out who Fenton is, but it was worth being included in his article. But Mahari are a team I have a lot of like respect for just because of their consistency. If you look through the Armagh Championship, they're just topping their group all the time. They've been to the semi-final the last 5 years, the final twice. So, and like they've lost two of those semi-finals out of three to Cross McGlen. So they've been really, like, I think, just maxing out on what they probably have. So it would be great to see them challenge Cross McGlen. I can't see them beating them, considering they've struggled with that. But no, it's good to see them back in the final after 2 years in the semis.
Yeah, they have the Forkers kind of as their driving force. Two of them definitely played inter-county. Maybe the third, I'm not sure if the third one did. Stephen Kernan is the Cross McGlen manager this year. They have Jim McConville in with him and Francis Fitzpatrick. Stephen Kernan, like, he's young to be their manager. It's very definitely an interesting one. And Cross McGlen are kind of at the stage where you wouldn't know a huge amount of their team. They're kind of bringing in minors every year and giving lads a chance.
Yeah, no, I noticed the O'Neill just going through their semi-final lineup there, and noticed the O'Neills and then the Aaron Kernan as well. But when I saw Stephen Kernan, I thought, Jesus, he's still not young enough to be playing. But obviously, one of those few that made the immediate transition from playing to management. But Mahari beat these in the first game back off the league, just there a couple of months ago, and they beat them by maybe it was just a point, so a tight battle. So whether they can, you know, hold that in their favor. But I was surprised. I think Cross McGlen are 4-1 on. I still fancy them to win this, but I thought the odds were a little bit harsh towards Mahari. So they might use that as motivation come this weekend as well.
Yeah, we'll get somebody from that match, or we'll get someone from the Antrim hurling final on to talk to us on Monday's show. Last one is just a random fixture, lads. It's a Westmead semi-final. It's the Downs versus St. Lomans. The Downs beat Gary Castle in the quarterfinals. A big surprise. John O'Matney is their manager. Interestingly enough, he's got connections with the club. A friend who's managed to get him down managing him, which is, you know, a huge coup for the Downs to get him down there. But the Downs is a club that I just remember the Downs because it's Shane Deering's club, and Shane Deering was a player that I used to love. He's around the same age as me, an incredible player. And Colin, you should remember Shane Deering because he tackled Johnny McBride in injury time in the last attack in the minor All-Ireland final in 1995. Do you remember Shane Deering? You won't remember Shane Deering as affectionately as I will, or have we talked about this before?
We haven't talked about this before, but now you're talking about Johnny McBride, let's talk about some more.
Do you remember the rugby tackles? So Derry, Westmead are winning by a point in the All-Ireland Minor Final in 1995. Johnny McBride, who's the midfielder, he's the captain of Derry. They've won last attack. Fairly sure Enda Muldoon is on that. Enda Muldoon was definitely on that minor team as well. And they had another big tall fella playing either full forward or centre forward as well. I can't remember his name. But anyways, Johnny McBride's bursting down. He's getting around to 45. Derry need a goal or they need a point. And Shane Deering, who was a background in rugby, just literally, like, this is worse than Sean Cavanagh ever did. He literally rugby tackled him and dragged him to the ground. And Derry made a balls of the free, and Westmead are all our minor champions. And I don't know what age you were in 95, but I'm surprised you don't remember that.
And this is the Leinster Championship that you hold up on a pedestal.
I can forget about Shane Deering as far as he's a man, but geez, he was a magic player, lads. He was absolutely brilliant. I marked him once in an under-21 Leinster final. I was wing back, he was wing forward, and I only lasted 10 minutes because I did my hamstring. I had done it in the Sigerson, but they were our huge rivals, Westmead, at the time, and I didn't like Westmead, but I couldn't but like this fella. He was explosive. He was so dynamic and so fast, and had an incredible sidestep. Anyways, he's not even playing for the Downs anymore. I just thought it. I thought I'd talk about Shane Deering. I don't think he's playing for the Downs. Jeez, he would be my age now. He'd be in his 40s. You wouldn't know with him. Anyway, the Downs are a very young team. John O'Matney is quoted as saying, "This is how young we are. The three lads actually got their leaving cert results on Monday night and trained with us. The club would have won under 20 and minor titles recently, and the average age of the senior team is only 23. So that's the sort of project and the sort of situation it is. It's trying to bring all these guys up to meet their potential as seniors and fit them in with the experienced lads like Luke O'Loughlin and the older lads who are already established." Like, I mean, when you think about it, like, is there a better fella than John O'Mahony to be managing your club? A legend who has won All-Irelands, two All-Irelands with Galway, won a Connacht with Leitrim, which is as big an achievement. And you're a young fella coming up through the ranks, and you might be cocky. You're not going to be cocky to John O'Mahony, Conan. Like, I mean, he's the perfect appointment for a young club whose average age is 23.
Absolutely. Like, you just command respect for the entire year. Like, you know, it'll be a long time before you get tired or start rolling your eyes with John O'Mahony. Like, these boys will have just automatic presence. And, like, the boys, as a team is that age, like, you know, imagine how fast they're going to be learning, how much stuff they're going to be taking in from what he sends them. And this might just be simple stuff in terms of instilling belief in them, in terms of, like, them sticking their chest out a little bit. Like, I think it's, as you say, it's a huge coup, and I can only imagine how much it's going to stick with all those boys.
Yeah, so John O'Mahony is, I think this will probably tell you all you want to know about Mayo football. He won two All-Irelands with Galway. He's a Mayo man. He comes back to manage Mayo and ruins his reputation with his own county.
He's back in a terrible time.
He basically became unemployable after managing Mayo for a few years.
Had he come back maybe early 2000s, you know, we got to All-Irelands in 2004 and 2006, it might be different. I think a lot of the team disappeared maybe after 2006. And my abiding memory of John O'Mahony actually is, I think I mentioned it when we were talking about Pierce Handley last week, is getting absolutely hammered by Derry up in Celtic Park. I think it was Pierce Handley's last game for Mayo. John O'Mahony was in charge at the time as well. So, but yeah, listen, he's done loads to kind of recover that reputation since, Willie. He's been involved with a lot of teams. Bridget's for one in Roscommon, but he mightn't necessarily be manager. He's kind of been brought on as an advisor. And any team that seems to have brought him on has always done well. And that's no accident too. So, and a history with bringing through young players as well with the counties, and with he's been involved with Nathies in his native Balladreen as well. So, like, as you said, huge boost for them. I just wonder who the oldest player is on that team to bring the average age to 23, because I know we've a young team in Kelchiman. I'm 36, so I bring the average age up about a few years. So I wonder, is that the case with Luke Loughlin and these experienced fellas?
Shane Deering
at 42. Yeah, he's definitely, he could drag it up. So are you going to retire, Connor, now if you win the intermediate? It's not this weekend, it's the following weekend. Like, is that you done? Like, I mean, is this just lifting that cup at 36, young child, you know, and you've enough on your plate, and you'll say to the lads in the dressing room, lads, there's just an announcement to make. That's me done, lads. I've had a great innings. We finally got to the top of the mountain, and that's it for me.
Well, I've no dressing room to make this announcement, didn't we? I might have to wait till the dressing rooms come back. But this short season is making me change my mind. You know, it's if you only have to rock up, you know, if you have to rock up for training in July, and then you're finished your season by, you know, in the middle of September, October, that sounds good to me. But I'll tell you, Willie, I'll reserve that decision, and I'll give you the exclusive once the final is over. How about that?
Outstanding. Listen, we'll definitely get you on the Monday if you win that intermediate, right? So that's a promise.
100%. Might not be for the whole show, but I'll give you a chat.
Probably not for the whole show. Right, listen, we leave it on that note, lads. We'll be back on Monday as usual, and we'll review especially the two county finals, but we'll review everything else that we can as well. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.